Welcome to the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. This is the place where we help committed couples who want to level up their marriage experience newfound clarity, hope, and confidence. We're Matthew and Kim, co-hosts and husband and wife.
In 26 years together, we've seen a lot and never thought it could be as good as it is right now. We're here to help you successfully navigate the messy, dirty, and wonderful world of marriage.
We believe all couples deserve and are capable of experiencing an extraordinary and fulfilling marriage. And each week, we're bringing you life lessons from real-life successful couples to help you grow and strengthen your relationship.
We'll get started right after this message.
If you want to learn how to experience the best, most fulfilling year of your marriage, we invite you to order Matthew's new book, Kick-Ass Husband, Winning at Life, Marriage, and Sex. You can get it at Amazon.com or visit Matthew's website, www.matthewpkaufman.com. Again, that's Amazon.com or www.matthewpkaufman.com. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. Today's episode brings us this kick-ass couple, Kristen Granger and Dan Wetzel, who took their passion for music and their love for each other to form the bluegrass-leaning Americana powerhouse of terrific songwriting, lush vocals, and crazy good instrumentalists in their band, True North. Kristen Granger is lead singer, chief songwriter, and co-founder with Dan of Americana string band, Kristen Granger and True North. As a nationally recognized songwriter, she wrote their first number one single, Ghost Tattoo, in 2020. She's won and been a finalist in several of the nation's most prestigious songwriting contests, including Telluride Bluegrass Festival, Wildflower, and Merlefest. Alongside Dolly Parton and Brandi Carlile, she was named one of the women who wrote our 2020 soundtrack by the Bluegrass Situation. In addition to her work as a performing artist, she has served as vice president of Willamette University and written speeches for two Oregon governors, three university presidents, and an Oregon attorney general. Dan Wetzel provides direction and leadership for True North, the band he co-founded with Kristen, and produces the band's recordings. Three of their albums have hit number one on folk radio charts. He has earned considerable recognition as a singer-songwriter and toured nationally as a solo artist after winning a national songwriting contest. An accomplished multi-instrumentalist, Dan has superb skills with guitar, both flat pick and fingerstyle, mandolin, and octave mandolin. His multifaceted musical skills and techniques help give True North songs their driving groove. When not on stage, Dan designs and builds beautiful instruments that they and other musicians use in performance. We are so excited to have a dynamic musical powerhouse couple with us today from the West Coast of the United States. Welcome back to the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast, and we are welcoming Kristen Granger and Dan Wetzel to the podcast today. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you guys for having us.
Pleasure to be here.
Our pleasure. We're glad to have you. We love to start off every interview with kind of a similar question. And Dan, I'm going to ask you to start. If you don't mind, I'd like to know what you think makes the two of you a kick-ass couple.
Well, that's a good question. We met a little bit later in our life and both had been in other marriages and relationships. And so we're real picky about what we wanted in a relationship. And when we met, it was just real easy to see how that fit together. And we've been able to share so many parts of our lives. I think we each had a long list of things that were important to us to find in a partner. And we found that in each other. So the things we do together and the time we spend together is just kind of top shelf for both of us.
That's great. How about, what would you add to that, Kristen?
To me, the wonderful thing about being Dan's wife and Dan's partner is that we love to be together and we have lots of common interests. And I know there's lots of couples who are like, well, I want my independence and I want to go off and do my things and come back to a couple, but we just want to be together all the time. And fortunately, we've structured our lives so we can be. We make music together. We work in the garden together. We walk and hike and enjoy the outdoors together. Our kids live nearby, so we see them. And it's just, it's this great compatibility that is both exciting and peaceful. And I love that about our relationship.
Great. So you got some good elements going there.
Sounds like you share a lot of quality time together, which is awesome.
We really do. We feel really lucky about that. Neither of us have to say, well, I'm hope it's okay with you. I'm going to go off and do this now. It's usually something we're both doing and we just have one schedule to coordinate that way. So.
And of course, you know, if you fall in love with Dan Wetzel, then you have to learn to play golf. And I had never even held a golf club in my hands, didn't know a thing about it, didn't know what the little pointy wood things were, no idea. So I took up golf. He taught me everything I know about golf, which is still very little. But, you know, I think the other thing is that we try to meet each other in the middle and take up interests that the other person might have so that we can spend as much time together as we can.
Sure.
Too many people don't do that. And you're right. They go in separate directions and this just catch up with each other a little bit later. But I think it's really great when you're willing to say, hey, I'm going to take up golf. If it's something you love to do, I'm going to learn to do it too.
Exactly.
Well, I like to, when we ask questions to our interviewees, I love to go back a little bit before we go forward. I really believe that we're a product of the people who raised us. And sometimes that experience is a great one. And sadly, sometimes it can be a negative experience. And so, Dan, I'm going to ask you first, what did love look like when you were growing up? And how was it modeled for you?
You know, I grew up in a nuclear family. My mom and dad were married until they both passed away. And we had a fairly small family. I have one older sister and myself. So I learned that family meant dinner at the table every night and a lot of activities together when we were small. They would try to pick things that they knew we might be interested in or that they wanted to interest us in, like camping and fishing and things like that. And my parents weren't real demonstrative. They didn't say, I love you. They didn't to us out loud, but they demonstrated it in ways by always being there for us, always taking care of us. I think a lot of what I developed as what was important to me and what love meant, I kind of developed as I watched them, but also looked at other couples that I knew, either family members when I was smaller or couples as I started to become an adult and started to identify what I thought were the important elements of a relationship, an intimate relationship. And that evolved as I matured into not necessarily the big things. A lot of times it was the small things, you know, is this somebody I could spend all my time with? Is this somebody I would enjoy just sitting while we're both reading? Is this somebody I could be in the car with for 6 hours and still find conversation? And so those little tests became kind of my markers as I started to get into relationships of my own to figure out what love looked like.
So you felt loved. You just maybe didn't necessarily experience a lot of visible affection.
Exactly. That's well said. And I know my sister and I joke about this now as adults that when we were little, all we each heard about was how great the other one was. And we never heard it to ourselves. And then we would hear from the other one, oh, dad talks about you all the time and says this. But for whatever reason, it was awkward for them to say it directly to us. So we had to learn from our family what approval we had after spending our youth trying to get it, you know.
So there were things then that you took away from that. You said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to change this. And this is what I'm going to do in the next relationship. Or maybe things also that you said, well, I'm not going to do that because it really didn't work very well.
Exactly. I think everything we learn about relationships, we learn from being in them and watching them. And a lot of our decisions are reactions to what we did or didn't have. So yeah, it's real important and easy for me to tell my kids I love them and make sure and do that regularly. And for whatever reason that was awkward for my parents, I don't know, but I want to make sure they hear it from me all the time.
Sure. And that's just going to make it very easy for them and very natural for them to do it for their own children. How about you, Kristen? How was love modeled for you when you were growing up as a child?
Well, like Dan, I had a nuclear family that my parents were together until my father passed away a few years ago. And a big family, though, three brothers and me, four kids in 5 years. So it was a usually big, noisy scrum of, activity.
A full team.
Right. And we also like to do a lot of things together. My parents cultivated a few friendships, few close friendships in their adult world outside of the family, but really their focus was on us. And their relationship in terms of how they made decisions and whose domain was whose and how all that worked as a couple was really invisible to the kids. I think it was that's something they were very careful to say, this is a separate thing that's between us. And then they kind of had their own roles in raising kids. There was a lot of competition in my family. So competition for attention, competition for my father's approval. He was a very incredibly dynamic and accomplished, successful surgeon. He had really high standards. So the goal was always to outstrip your siblings and win the whatever it is, the attention of my dad, the approval of my dad. And that was a hard thing for me to overcome. As one of the things as a parent I've sought to never do is to try to, for lack of a better word, pit kids against each other. But at the same time, it made us all very achievement oriented, and all of my brothers are very accomplished, and we've had these kind of high powered jobs. And I think my mom was, the house was her domain. My dad was the working world, and the world of professional medicine was his domain. And they both liked and were good at their respective roles. And I appreciated that connectivity and compatibility between the two of them. There was not a lot of controversy or conflict in my house growing up related to the relationship between my parents. And my father and mother loved each other. They were demonstrative about their love for each other, but they never argued or discussed really anything of substance in front of the kids. And so we never had any idea about whether there was any kind of, issues. I remember once when my parents were going to move from a place my mother loved to a place they didn't know very much about. And my mom had just bought her first house, and they were very excited about, living in this nice little neighborhood. And then my dad found a practice he wanted to join. And my mom was just kind of grumpy for a few months. But other than that, I mean, I really didn't have a sense of the any kind of a conflict there. So there were some good things to pick up and some things that I personally thought I don't know that that's not the kind of relationship I want to have. And I also think the sharing of parenting is super important, and to not have, your one parent that is on the day to day, here's how the household's going to work. And then dad's kind of, so what are we doing about this problem? And, so mom was kind of in charge of the parenting and dad was in charge of bringing home the bacon. And that's a generational thing. It's a conventional thing. It's not something that I wanted to replicate in my own relationship.
Sure. Great. Well, we have 14 pillars in relationships. I don't know if you have reviewed them or if you have that sheet in front of you. We're going to talk about that a little bit today. And of those 14, we kind of feel there's three central or foundational ones. We call them the three C's: commitment, communication, and conflict resolution. And I want to start off with the first C, which is commitment. And Dan, I'd love for you to tell me, what does commitment look like in the relationship that you have with Kristen?
It's all encompassing. It's kind of the main thread of our relationship. And that was one of those things that I knew was important to me, and I learned was important to Kristen when I first met her, that it's not really a solid relationship you can trust unless that element is there. And how that manifests itself is a thousand ways. Kristen mentioned we love to spend time with each other, but we're also going to always make sure we know what's going on with each other, check in a lot. We text probably, 50 times a day, sometimes more, if we're busy doing things and just want to offer support, or, hey, how's that going? Or, hey, can you do this? It's a good source of communication, but then every chance we'll have, we'll be on the phone if we're not together. And then when we have a chance, we'd rather just spend our time together and sit and talk. And that commitment is a thread through our whole relationship. There's just never going to be a doubt whose corner we're in first. When any kind of a thing comes up, it might be a group dynamic where there's conflict or something. We just know that we have each other's back first and foremost, and that we're going to show that to everyone that's involved. And then we tell that to each other in many ways. One of my favorite things we do is we don't give each other anniversary presents, but we write a letter to each other that kind of encompasses the past year since our last anniversary. And we write them and then we read them out loud to each other. Like I'll read the one Kristen wrote me and she'll read the one I wrote her. And it's a great summary of the past year. What are the highlights? What were the great moments? What's important to us in a relationship now? This year we wrote our 21st one of those letters. Our 21st anniversary was a few weeks ago.
Congratulations on 21.
Thank you.
That's a beautiful tradition.
What a beautiful
practice.
It's just
been great. It's like our favorite thing. We get a chance to talk about everything that's important to us and say it out loud in writing, even if we've maybe not mentioned it as many times as we wanted to during the year or something. But
it is, I think, one of the best decisions we made early in our marriage, is we've done it since the first anniversary, is to eschew the idea of having to shop and find gifts every year. It didn't mean anything after a while. I felt like this is the right thing for us to renew that connection and remember the reasons we fell in love and stay in love.
That's a great tradition.
I love that you read them out loud as well, because it's coming from you directly.
Yeah.
No tears ever, right? No tears are shed, right?
Every time.
Every time.
That happens to me too.
It's been amazing. As I read this letter Kristen writes me, I'm like, I'll stop, you noticed that? Oh, that you're making note of that. I thought that kind of flew by and it was only important to me, but you never feel more seen by your partner than when they put it all down in writing to say, here's what I see.
That's beautiful. What a great testament. Kristen, what I'd love to kind of ask you, what does commitment look like to you in your relationship with Dan?
Well, I think the thing that comes through for me in terms of commitment is that it's something I want to do, not something I got to do. It's something that it's a fundamental foundational thing. And it's like, I don't love breathing. It's something that's always there. And I know that it's evident to other people. We were once last year, we were playing a show up in Portland, and backstage that one of the women, we were playing with a group of artists we didn't know. So it was a series of acts. And one of the artists said to me, "Is that guy your husband?" And I said, "Yes, he is." And she said, "Well, that's good, because if he wasn't your husband going to be pissed." And there's something that people can tell about how we look at each other and how we interact, and even how we perform music, that just is emblematic of our commitment to each other. And it's not an act, it's just there. And I know if we're in a crowded room and Dan's across the room, we're going to find each other's eyes, and these smiling eyes are going to be catching mine from across the room, and that warm feeling that is the fundamental element to me of being committed to another person. Is everyone can tell you're committed, whether you're wearing a ring or not, whether you're saying this is my husband or not, they can tell that you're a couple and that you're in it to win it, kind of.
That expressiveness and, the way you're expressing yourselves to each other, people see that and they pick that up.
Yeah, I'd love to. So I want to ask a little follow-up question. Two beautiful examples. Thank you for sharing both of those about commitment. And I have a question because not being a performing artist, at least currently in music, I would love to know from each of you, are there songs that you all perform together that were either written for or about each other? Or when you sing them or play them, are you playing them to or for each other?
Well, so I am the person who writes most of the music for Christine Granger and True North, our band, and we play as a duo often. Started out as a duo, and we still frequently book about half our shows as a duo. And I've written three, I think, songs about Dan, and there are some of them that when we play them, both of us have to keep from tearing up. And people come up after the show and say, where can I find that song that, you know, that Avalanche song or the Be Here Now song? Cause I want to take that home, and it means something to them too. They can tell that it's a love song.
The ones that Kristen writes for me, I'm lucky enough to get to be the guitar player on them, but I noticed that I don't sing on any, a lot of our songs we sing as duets, and I don't sing on any of those. And part of that is because it's her message to me. And part of it is because I can't for the first 2 years. I'm just looking down and tearing up and trying to get through the guitar part because it's so touching, you know, for me to have her write something like that for me and then present it to the world and say, look, you know.
Yeah.
I did write one that we sing as a duo that is, about relationships and how that, you know, you kind of the peaks and valleys of relationships and how you soldier on through difficult times. And if you're committed, you're going to be in it for the long haul, and not all gooey, dewy eyed love, but just the reality of what a real committed relationship looks like. So, yeah. So I guess they kind of run the spectrum.
I want to talk with the two of you a little bit about communication and what communication looks like in your relationship. You know, it's essential, I think, that we learn to communicate well within a relationship, but it's not always easy. So, Kristen, how do you and Dan communicate in your relationship? What does that look like in your marriage?
Well, since we do so many things, so music is a really intimate thing when you're writing music and when you're performing music. And we used to joke that a band is like a dysfunctional family without the unconditional love. I mean, that's how bands operate. They don't have the same level of emotional investment in you know, the success of the endeavor as a family would have, but they all have to kind of coexist and communicate and thrive together. And in our relationship, since we do so many things together that require this intimacy and trust and connection, that this checking in thing that Dan talked about, we check in a lot. And when we're not together for even a few hours, we just like to be in connection and just check in. And well, you know, we communicate through just ordinary things that couples do in terms of parenting, in terms of, you know, running a household, managing a budget, those kinds of things. But more than that, I think our communications is through this closeness. And when we don't feel that closeness, we call it being in the bubble. And when we don't feel like we're in the bubble, then we want to stop and figure out why and get back in it. And sometimes we do that with talking. Sometimes we do that with physical touch. Sometimes we do that with music. But that's an important part of how we reconnect or refresh that connection and get back in the bubble.
Does one of you just say, wait, time out, we're not in the bubble, we've got to regroup? Is that something you would say to each other?
It's more like, I can't find you. You know, I can't find you. I feel like there's something bothering you, or that I want to be able to find you. That's usually the phrase. And
not that you've ever had to say that, of course.
No, right. Only on the golf course. Right.
You know where to find it.
Yeah, that's right. I'm in the sand trap. He's on the green. Yes. Anyway, I know.
How about for you, Dan? Would you add anything to that? Your communication style with Kristen?
You know, we have some things that are built into our relationship too that I think foster a lot of communication. We have these two chairs that we've had since we first got together. We call them the Archie and Edith chairs, which I'm kind of dating myself there as All in the Family reference, but they sit close to each other with a little table between. We have coffee there every morning to start our day. We eat all our dinners at the kitchen table. And those two times we know we have built in, it's time to, in the morning one, it's kind of, what do we have in store today? What's unresolved from yesterday? What's our plan? What, if any, are any issues? Sometimes that's just a quick check-in. Sometimes that's a two-hour conversation if there's something pressing. Same with at the dinner table, you know. And then we do a lot of long walks together too, and it's always a chance to both get out and be out in the world and do something physical, but have these long talks. And sometimes it's obvious what we want to talk about. Hey, let's get back to this and let's figure out what we're going to do about this. And other times there's nothing pressing. So what are you thinking? And then the other one will say, oh, I'm thinking about this. And then that turns into a 2-hour conversation at a longer walk than we planned. So having those systems in place is something we can really count on. We know we're not going to go days without a chance to sit down and see what's going on. And it is always driven by, if there is some issue that one of us feels unresolved about or like we need to talk about, we don't necessarily wait for one of those two moments either. We'll just immediately say, hey, can we talk a minute? Are you busy? Let's go to the Archie and Edith chairs, you know, and sit down and talk. So I like having those systems in place, sort of.
Yeah, you create a lot of opportunities to connect with each other, and that's really important in a relationship.
Yeah, good regular communication. And I love I remember All in the Family. And
same.
and the show we watched right after that was The Jeffersons, right? Moving on up to the East Side. So yeah, good memory.
When it comes to creating a kick-ass marriage, do you ever wonder what you could be doing better? Have you ever thought how helpful it would be to be a part of a like-minded community of other imperfect couples who want to level up in their number one relationship? Come visit Kick-Ass Couples Nation, where you can talk with people just like you who are looking for ways to invest in and increase their joy, commitment, and fulfillment in their most important human relationship. You'll have access to a team of licensed marriage therapists, coaches, articles, podcasts, live webinars, and more. Just visit MatthewPHoffman.com so you can learn more about a community that's ready to help you level up. That's MatthewPHoffman.com, so you can become of the growing Kick-Ass Couples Nation right now.
The third C is conflict resolution. And, you know, if you've been together and been through more than one relationship especially, you know that no matter what, no matter how sweet and good it is, there's always conflicts or disagreements. So, Dan, I'd love to kind of hear from you first. When conflicts arise, what do you guys do and how do you approach those and work through it?
Well, it depends on what it is, of course. And so many of our conflicts aren't necessarily with each other, but it's something that's really hard to deal with. It might be an issue with one of our kids or a family member or a big decision we need to make about a job or the band or something like that. And it can be hard to talk about, but our first move is always to say, can we sit down and talk? And that's the first thing, is to talk about it, not to, hey, I need 3 hours by myself, get away from me. We never take that approach. Sure, there's going to be disagreements and things. I kind of have this theory, and I'm not sure Kristen agrees, but I don't think couples have a lot of arguments. I think they have one argument over and over and over that manifests itself in a whole bunch of different ways. Sure. And it's usually just a fear-based thing, you know, it's usually, if you really, really, really knew me, would you still love me? And that's some deep fear that I think we have inside of us as humans. And even though there's all this evidence from your partner that, of course, sometimes you just need that affirmation and you need that to say it out loud and hear it out loud one more time. And so we usually try and get to what's the core issue here, because it's probably not that I brought the wrong peaches at the store or something. It's probably something underneath that. And I think we're really good at identifying, you know, just pausing during the conversation or going, oh, now I realize what I'm actually arguing about. And it isn't this thing that brought us to the chairs, you know, it's some other thing that maybe is an old issue or something I brought into the relationship and never figured out how to deal with.
Sure. So taking the time, what I hear you saying is how you guys take the time to be patient with each other and figure out what's going on under the surface and try to figure that out and understand.
Yeah. And that patience, Kristen is brilliant at both in her career and in personal relationships with everyone she knows. She can look at any situation and first see the huge picture of it. And then keep that in mind the whole time that she's dialing down on what the little issue is that's manifesting itself. She does this when she writes songs. She'll take a huge topic and then figure out a way to show that in a minute way that everyone can relate to, because everybody feels the impact of that huge topic. And so when you talk about conflict resolution, her having that insight is so helpful. And I've learned a lot from that, from trying to keep that in mind. What's the bigger picture here?
That's great. Kristen, how about you? When you look at your relationship, how do you handle or deal with conflict as it arises in your relationship with Dan?
Well, I will say we have been fortunate to not have, knock on wood anyway, not to have have huge problems, big money problems or other kinds of things that really drive or test couples or drive them apart or anything like that so far. It's been pretty easy stuff, but you got to remember, I come from a family of arguers. Okay. So grew up in a family of competitors and arguers, and it was who can win the argument, not how do we resolve the issue. And it took me a long time to learn how to resolve conflict without having to there be a victor in the situation, because that is the death, I think, of intimacy, is when there has to be someone who wins and someone who loses, and you have to keep score and blame and whatever. And that's something that I really have learned from Dan is that, what are we really arguing about here? And what are we really afraid of here? And maybe it all boils down to, I need reassurance. And then you can move forward with that. You can go forward from there. Or fear of, you think I might be a bad parent or something. You know, so you have to have the other person say, wait. Okay, so the issue isn't that you're a bad parent. The issue is, this is a difficult situation, and I believe you are a great parent. And just, you know, something like that. You have to have that fundamental, like the Oslo talks, everybody came to the table because they knew the others wanted peace. Everybody was there because they wanted peace. And if you come to that situation knowing it's a place of acceptance and love and trust, then you can really horn in on what are the real underlying problems here that are coming between us, and how can we eradicate those?
I think as soon as couples lose sight that they're on the same team, right? So many of us think that all of a sudden it's one against the other. But when we realize, okay, wait, we are on the same team. We can figure this out together and conquer this together. That's when it clicks.
Yeah. And we talk about a lot in a relationship, in your relationship and ours. If it's a win for the us, it's a win for the relationship, and you both benefit. If it's win-lose, I won, you lost, the relationship doesn't win. And it hurts the relationship in that. And I heard you saying too, Kristen, that I want to point out is motive. Like when you're coming to in the partnership and you're coming to a disagreement or conflict, or you're discussing opinions or passionate, what's your motive? If your motive is to get through it and be supportive and understand, it's going to go great. If your motive is to win or debase or break down, it can get pretty messy and ugly. And what I heard you saying is, your motive is to get through it and understand, and that's a fantastic motive. So it matters what you want to achieve and what you're hoping to get out of it when you come in. And so I appreciate that.
In addition to the three pillars that we just talked about, we have 11 more, and we believe that all of these pillars are essential to a successful marriage. But of the 11 remainder, Dan, is there one that resonates with you? I'm curious, do you have the pillars in front of you?
We do, yeah.
Okay, perfect.
right here.
Is there one that really stands out to you?
Well, I would agree with you that every single one of them feels important. But in my relationship with Kristen, fun and humor is such a huge part of our time together. We are constantly, when we're first few years we were married, it's like, why aren't we writing a sitcom? This is funny. And then we realized we are writing a sitcom and we're starring and directing and producing it every day. This is it. I can't wait to hear what is going to come out of Kristen's mouth. And I learned early on about her, how, what her sense of humor was like and how fast her thinking speed was. And so it's just, we can get into this situation where we're just bantering with wit as quick as we can. And it just gets funnier and funnier where we, you know, if I'm driving, sometimes I just have to pull over and laugh my head off. But it is such a great part of our life. There's just not a day that goes by that's dark and gloomy. And we can always find humor in everything. And Kristen's very careful not to have a victim in that. She doesn't make fun of people, but she's just such a fast thinker and a witty person. And I love that. When I first started dating Kristen, a friend of mine who I'd known for years said, "You finally found someone that can keep up with you." And I said, "Oh, she's way ahead of me. And I'm just trying to stay in shape because it's really fun." So
that's great. How about for you, Kristen? Is there a pillar that really resonates with you?
Well, I mean, I love the fun and humor too, because I think that is a huge part of who we are. And as performers and as partners and as friends and parents. But I also think appreciation is, that pillar resonated with me, because while we have all this compatibility, we have totally different skill sets. And Dan is always so great about showing appreciation for the things that I do well and the things that I bring to the relationship. And I try to do the same for him too. He's incredibly creative and talented and makes guitars and all kinds of musical instruments in our basement, beautiful instruments. And he can fix anything or build anything. He was a professional contractor for years. And so I don't have any ability in that way. I also appreciate that he is, he's a great athlete. He's a great parent. He's a great husband, and I want to demonstrate that I appreciate that and that I see him. It's all about that being seen thing. That's an important part. What keeps us in the bubble is knowing the other person knows us, the good things and the bad things, and appreciates who we are in the world and can show that appreciation. And that, I think, is key to intimacy. It's key to all these other things, is knowing that they appreciate all of the good things that the other person is, and also the challenges that we all face, that they appreciate that you're doing the best you can all the time.
Yeah. Showing that kind of gratitude towards each other and appreciation for each other is really impactful in a relationship, because it makes you feel seen and heard and safe, and it does so much good for your relationship.
Yeah. Never heard anybody say, "Gosh, my spouse appreciates me way too much. They say too many good things about me," right? I mean, we all, it's oxygen.
It's more like he ran out of superlatives, right? That's the main problem.
That's right. Got to keep studying and working on the words. Well, Kim and I are also big proponents of a concept that we call overflow thinking. And we firmly believe that the strength of your number one relationship, your romantic relationship, really is the center and source of everything else in your life, and that goodness can flow out into everything else you do. So I'd love to hear each of you talk a little bit. Kristen, maybe you'd start. Is, how do you see the goodness of your relationship with Dan overflow into other parts of your life?
The most thing that leaps to my mind first is music. So a lot of people remark, including my mom and other intimate members of my family, remark that on stage, we demonstrate a lot of love and appreciation for each other without saying anything. And we don't even realize we do it. That there's obviously a very deep connection between us that is the result of appreciating each other and being continuously in awe of the other one. And that is reflected in how we engage with each other, how we look at each other, how we talk to each other, and how we talk about each other during musical performances. I also think, like I say, music is a super intimate thing to do, and it can be hard. A lot of couples are where there's two musicians, they don't perform together, or they don't perform the same kind of music. And there's this like, who's doing better in their career thing. And we don't have any of that. We don't have any of that, because everything we do is to build up what the other person does. And we have different skill sets in the music situation, but they're very compatible. And that comes across when we perform the music, and the number of what we've built over the years musically, and the number of fans we have, and albums we make, and bookings we get, it is a reflection of the joy people see in how we are together, and that they feel and want to be around. They want to be around that good feeling, that loving feeling.
Beautiful. That's a great example. How about you, Dan? How do you see the goodness of your relationship overflow into other areas of your life?
Well, I would definitely agree with everything Kristen just said. Music's probably the most obvious and biggest example of that. But also, things I've learned in our relationship have changed how I deal with other people in my life. Kristen's ability to look at every person and really see them and figure out what's good for this person? What does this person need? Whether she's picking out a gift for them or just wants to make them something or give them a book or something. And she, because of this approach, she has friends she's had for 40 years that she still nurtures those relationships and knows how to maintain them. And I didn't really have that skill set when I met her. I was a typical guy, I guess. Oh yeah, I used to know that guy in college, but I don't know where he is now. And there were a few relationships I held close, but I've learned so much from this relationship about how to nurture a relationship and maintain it, and how to really focus on where somebody is in their life and what might be not helpful, but you know, positive for them to receive from me or from us. And I've found that has changed my relationships with lots of people because of my relationship with Kristen.
One other thing I'd add is that what we don't realize how we come across to other people until things like what people say about our music, but also young couples say, we want to be you guys. We want to be like you. And our daughter picked someone that she thought was going to be the person that would help her become the best version of herself. I mean, that's the biggest compliment and the biggest affirmation, is to have new couples or young couples or newlyweds say, so we want to be like you guys when we grow up. This is what we want for ourselves.
It's infectious. That's great role modeling. And what a gift you've given to your family, especially in that regard. Dan, if you had to go back and give yourself, your unmarried self, a piece of advice, what would you say to yourself?
Well, luckily I took this advice, and I almost didn't, but it would be to hold out and wait for the right person, to really be selfish when picking a partner. And I know so many people who settled for whoever was available at the time, or checked some of the boxes so it seemed okay, and it's just not loveless necessarily, but not thrilling. And you know, I had the training wheel relationship that I outgrew, and then was alone for quite a few years, and kind of had resigned myself to, you know, maybe that's okay, maybe I'll be single from now on. And then I met Kristen and was first a little wary of, I don't know if I want to get back into a marriage. But as I started to really examine what our relationship was, it was everything I ever wanted and has far surpassed that since. So I would say that to my young self. I say that to people I know now who are searching and maybe starting to feel desperate in a search for a partner, is just hold out and be picky and wait for the right person. And sometimes That means not looking harder. It means just being yourself more and letting these people come across your path. Because I think there's a desperation that you wear, especially men, wear across our face like a blinking light. Like, I'm desperate for a partner. Are you the one? And, you know, that's going to make anybody kind of back off. And if you quit looking and really just work on who you are and being comfortable with yourself is when someone amazing comes along and recognizes that.
And I think it's out of desperation that we really don't see some of those things, those qualities in people that are probably things that we should avoid. People we probably should stay away from, because that desperation just sort of takes over and says, oh, it's just that one little thing, or it's just those couple little things. Because it only, as you know, when you are together over time, it only enhances and only becomes a much, you know, bigger thing. How about for you, Kristen? If you had to go back and give your unmarried self a piece of advice, what would you say to yourself?
Just because everyone's getting married doesn't mean you should get married. And just because someone asks you to marry them doesn't mean you need to say yes. I got married too young. I was too young and stupid to know better. And I guess what I would say, that it's along the lines of Dan, of hold out for the right one, but also don't think that marriage is something you have to do or you need to do, and you need to do when you're 25. I was actually 22. So it is something that you should really, really want and know is the right thing before you dive in. And it just, you know, we get all caught up in this period of time, like that, those liminal years between when you graduate from college and turn 30, and suddenly everyone's getting married and having kids, and there's this suddenly this big pressure, and your parents are starting to go, well, so are you thinking about getting married anytime soon? Anyway, it just not to live someone else's life, but to live your own.
I hear you say, have the courage to say no if you feel it.
So you guys have been so gracious with your time and open and honest. We are grateful for our time together. If people want to learn more about you and what you do and your work and your art, where can they find you and where should they look?
Well, you can listen to Kristen Granger and True North on Spotify or any place you download music or any place you stream music. We also have a website, of course, truenorthband.com. It's got lots of tracks and biographical information and videos and all kinds of stuff about us on that, along with our schedule.
Thank you both so much. You have such a healthy, beautiful relationship, and we're so grateful that you are willing to share a lot of pearls with our listeners today. Thank you.
So, you know, I see this little instrument behind you, and I'm sure there's probably something else within reach, and I'm not asking for performance. I don't want you to sing a song, because I know that's not appropriate, but would you guys mind sharing a riff, a sentence, anything at all from any of your music, just for us to get a flavor?
Sure. So you can see, if you turn this a little bit, you can see all those instrument necks.
Yeah, see, I only saw one. There's like a Dan whole arsenal
built,
back there.
Dan built all of those instruments right there. And he built this one right here. This is my tenor ukulele. And then he plays guitar, he plays banjo, he plays anything basically with strings. He can also build. Okay, how about
we could just do like a verse and a chorus or something.
There you go.
Yeah, just okay, a sample, how about, because we want, the first, we want everybody, if even if they don't go to Spotify, which we will, we have, we want them to get a sample of your some of your greatness.
Okay. Well, happy to.
Does that sound good? Yeah, through the first stitch my shadow.
Yeah. Always.
fields, point out road from that field. I should be all right.
Is that enough?
Beautiful. Thank you. Yeah, I wish I had the clapping button on the soundboard I could hit. And thank you so much for that gift.
You're welcome.
And of course.
Thank you so much for allowing us to spend time together. So many beautiful things about the two of you, and we can't wait to share them with our audience. So we
appreciate it. Such a pleasure to meet you both. Thanks for doing this.
We will connect again soon. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
That's all we've got for this episode of the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. If you like the content of this show, you'll love Matthew's newly released book, Kick-Ass Husband, Winning at Life, Marriage, and Sex. To receive a digital mini book of quotes and images from the book, all you have to do is rate this show and leave a review in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to listen. Then email us a screenshot of your review at podcast@kickasscouplespodcast.com, and we'll get it over to you right away. Until next time, remember, happily ever after doesn't just happen, it's on purpose.